Radio Prague News.
Czech Prime Minister Andrej Babiš has been received by German Chancellor Angela Merkel for his first official visit of Germany. The environmental organization Greenpeace is testing the Vltava River for the presence of microplastics. And Karolina Plíšková has been knocked out in the quarterfinals of US Open. Czech Prime Minister Andrej Babiš was received by German Chancellor Angela Merkel with military honours on Wednesday for his first official visit of Germany. The two politicians are set to debate bilateral relations and European issues, including migration. Several dozen people gathered outside the German Chancellery in Berlin to protest against the Czech Prime Minister. Early on Wednesday, the Czech Prime Minister held talks with the representatives of several local think tanks and laid a wreath at the Berlin Wall Memorial. He's also scheduled to meet with Bundestag President Wolfgang Schäuble. Around half of the 216,000 people standing in municipal elections around the Czech Republic in October did not stand 4 years ago, Czech television reported. Data from the Czech Statistics Office shows that a large number of candidates who run on the tickets of political parties last time out have chosen to instead stand as independents, the station said. However, parties have also managed to attract people who didn't run at all in 2014, with the highest numbers joining the candidate lists of ANO, Freedom and Direct Democracy, and the Czech Pirate Party. Sales of new passenger cars in the Czech Republic in the first 8 months of 2018 increased by 4% compared to the same period last year to over 193,000 vehicles, according to figures released by the Association of Automobile Importers on Wednesday. According to the association, the growth has been a direct result of a change in the exhaust emissions limits, which came into effect in September last year. The biggest seller in the period between January and August was Škoda with over 59,000 cars, followed by Volkswagen and Hyundai. The Škoda Octavia remains to be the best-selling model, followed by Fabia and Rapid models. The environmental organization Greenpeace has taken samples from the Vltava River in Prague to measure the level of microplastic pollution in the water. The samples will be analyzed in a Greenpeace lab in Britain's Exeter. The testing is part of a campaign called Plastie Past, or Plastics Are a Trap, which attempts to eradicate excess plastic packaging. It also appeals to outdoor clothing producers to tackle the problem of microfibers which are released into the water during washing. Karolina Plíšková has been knocked out in the quarterfinals of tennis US Open, the same stage at which she exited the tournament last year. The Czech player was beaten by Serena Williams of the US 4-6-3-6. Plíšková was the last remaining Czech singles player in the final Grand Slam of the season. This year there were no Czech men in singles action at Flushing Meadows for the first time since 1970. And finally, a quick look at the weather. Thursday is expected to be mostly sunny with daytime highs ranging between 22 and 26 degrees Celsius. I'm Ruth Franková and that's the end of the news.
Hello, this is Radio Prague with me, Ian Willoughby. Today, Czech prison officers say they can't cope with overcrowded jails. A new project introduces Czech school students to the issue of anti-Semitism in the communist era. And a Czech scientist tells us about the benefits of 3D printing of metals. All that's coming up in today's program. There are more people behind bars in the Czech Republic per capita than anywhere else in Central Europe. And this is despite efforts over the past decade to promote alternative sentences such as house arrest or work release programs. With the penal system at overcapacity, prison service officials have renewed calls for action. Brian Kennedy has more.
In his final New Year's address of 2013, outgoing President Václav Klaus announced a controversial, wide-ranging amnesty applying both to inmates and suspects awaiting trial to mark 20 years of the Czech Republic's independence. That presidential pardon resulted in the release of some 6,400 people and, for a while, took pressure off the overcrowded prison system, cutting the population by about a third. But despite moves since then to extend capacity and build new facilities, the penal system is again at overcapacity, about 4% above the intended maximum population. General Major Petr Donon, head of the country's prison service, is among those who have long advocated giving judges greater leeway to hand out alternative sentences and reduce the pressure on the system.
Today we are dealing with prison overcrowding again. There are about 22,000 people in Czech prisons. The overcrowding affects mainly high-security prisons. In some cases there are 15 inmates in one cell. The prison service would definitely welcome if the number of alternative punishments and house arrests increased. Also, inmates would not be cut off from their families and wouldn't lose their jobs, which is often the case if they end up in prison.
The Ministry of Justice has laid out plans to motivate judges to grant alternative sentences, in part by rewarding them for doing so by reducing their own administrative burden. Prison Service Deputy Director Brigadier General Simon Michalidis says having fewer people incarcerated as punishment benefits the country as a whole.
I would greatly appreciate more alternative sentencing. This would help the prison service, but also Czech society. Alternative sanctions are much cheaper, or perhaps as ineffective as the deprivation of liberty. At least they are economically beneficial.
Mr. Michalidis says that regardless of the punishment, treating convicts with greater respect also helps prevent recidivism, noting that about a third of the prisoners released under the 2013 amnesty of Václav Klaus soon ended up back behind bars.
On the one hand, we were relieved after the amnesty, and we hoped that the Czech Republic would devote itself to implementing the necessary reforms before capacity was replenished. We had wanted there to be fewer people in prison than before the amnesty.
According to the Office of the Ombudsman, in 2016 there were 203 prisoners per 100,000 inhabitants in the Czech Republic. That's some 25 more than in other post-communist EU countries, and twice that of neighbouring Austria and Germany, where alternative sentencing is far more common.
That report was by Brian Kennedy. Now, whether it was in the show trials of the 1950s or reporting from the Middle East, there was an undercurrent of anti-Semitism in the communist propaganda apparatus in Czechoslovakia. At least that's the message of a new website aimed at Czech secondary schools. My colleague Tom McEncrow reports.
Bankéřská dynastie Rothschildů si z Izraele vytvořila centrum své politické...
Israel is the headquarters for Rothschild political power. Kibbutzes as indoctrination centres and Jewish schools as centres of racist militaristic teachings. These are just a few of the themes contained within videos and posters from the communist era now accessible via a website just launched by the Institute for the Study of Totalitarian Regimes, which oversees communist era files and other materials. Banking on a mix of primary sources, film materials, and a detailed methodology on how to interact with them, the website serves as a tool for teachers looking to get their students more analytically engaged. Historian Yaroslav Pinkas, one of the creators of the project, hopes that this will help break the myth that anti-Jewish feeling in Czechoslovakia disappeared after the fall of Nazi Germany.
Many societies, including ours, believe that anti-Semitism is someone else's problem. Through the tools offered on this website, people can see that there was a relatively strong current of anti-Semitism which did influence Czech society. Our aim is not to add another of many themes into the contemporary history curriculum at our schools, but rather to raise awareness of the historical extent of the problem and make clear that it didn't end with the Second World War.
Three distinct types of anti-Jewish state propaganda in Czechoslovakia between 1945 and 1989 are identified in the project. First, an era of immediate post-war anti-Semitism, then a second period based around criticism of the Zionist movement during the normalization era, and finally, the way in which Israel was depicted by communist media reporting from the Middle East. The website was tested in 2017 and has been introduced into the general teaching curriculum for the first time at the beginning of the new school year. Meanwhile, Mr. Pinkas's group is already busy on creating another digital tool to improve students' abilities in applying historical knowledge.
Our largest upcoming project at the moment is a website called History Lab, which is an online environment where students interact with primary sources, including caricatures, photographs, or texts.
Education, popularization, and research are the primary task of the Institute for the Study of Totalitarian Regimes, which was founded by a special government law in 2007.
Thank you for that, Tom McEncrow. Now, in the final part of our programme today, Jan Wellinger reports about the benefits of the 3D printing of metal.
3D printing has caught on more and more in recent years, both on the hobby and the industrial manufacturing ends of the market. At VSB, the Technical University of Ostrava, students can get a close-up look and experience in 3D printing, both in polymers and in metal. I spoke to the university's Petr Štefek. He's the vice rector for commercialization and cooperation with industry, asking him about work conducted at the school's Innovation Support Center, as well as the benefits of selective laser melting, or SLM.
It's like industry standard used in automotive or medical or aerospace industry. And SLM, or selective laser sintering technology, proven to be very good and very fast tool for rapid prototyping. Let's say if you are using the conventional manufacturing methods for prototyping, it costs a lot of money, because firstly you need to create casting molds and then wait for foundry for casting and other things. And it takes a lot of time to create a small part. And if you decided to use 3D printing, you get a lot of advantages. Let's say if you need to create some small parts for your end user product, you will get it on the table in a few days. If you use the conventional methods, it will take, let's say, 1 or 2 months. So for me, the biggest example is speed of development process.
That is certainly a very marked difference, a few days and a few months. I suppose also that you can make modifications more quickly as well, especially if you're dealing with a prototype part. You can still modify the design in the computer if you find something is off, whereas if you have a mold which was made specifically for to cast it, you have to make a completely different mold. Is that correct?
Yeah, this is correct. So if you are not convinced with the design of your part, you can recreate the design and have brand new prototype on your desk in a few days. Of course, it's not suitable only for prototyping. You can create small parts for end-user products in automotive industry or aerospace industry. For example, in aerospace industry, some of the companies in Czech Republic are using selective laser sintering on selective laser melting on the end-user parts for their products.
I was looking at some of the different pictures of the pieces. Is it true that when you're talking about a part that has to bear a certain load, that you're also at the same time talking about skimming weight, because a lot of it were different kinds of grids or honeycombs where the metal would be reinforced, but then a lot of empty space in between.
Yeah, exactly. This is the second big advantage of the additive manufacturing, because you are able to use the special tools for, say, generative design or topology optimization. And as you said, you can get the part which is lightweight and it's used in aerospace industry. So if you want to save 30 or 40% of weight for one part which are used in 10 times or more times in the aircraft, you will get your reward with additive manufacturing. And nowadays you can find hundreds or even thousands of the parts in the latest generation of civil aircrafts. But mostly, it's definitely mostly in non-critical systems, so it's not used in engines or in other critical parts of the plane, but mostly in non-critical, like seats, like some parts from plastics and parts.
It seems fairly commonplace already in industry. How long has it actually been that 3D printing in metal has become more commonplace in aerospace, in aircraft, as you said?
Good question. Actually, it took like 20 years, but I think that another 20 years it will take to, let's say, adopt the SLM or the future, maybe another future technology to be used in the most of the application in aerospace.
Is it also the case that, because we talked about the structure of the shape, that it's actually more precise and more effective in terms of the artificial intelligence in designing? Because I read that you put in the basic parameters in the design, but that it makes decisions itself based on how certain parts of, I guess, the honeycomb or the grid will look.
Yeah, that's true. But this is very special software applications, very expensive. We are using some of them on the university. But actually, the processes you mentioned are commonly used right now only in the biggest companies in the world, like Airbus or Boeing.
Now tell me a little bit about the printers that you have at the university. Obviously, you cooperate closely with the private sector. I can't imagine it would be possible any other way.
Yeah, we have two machines, one for selective laser mounting, you mentioned earlier, which is actually for prototyping metal alloys. We are printing from stainless steel or merging steel. The difference is that, for example, merging steel has much better hardness than stainless steel and it's usable for tools and molds, for example. And the second machine is based on selective laser sintering technology and is dedicated for 3D printing of polymers, plastics. The plastics are usable for end-user products, so it's not only for prototyping, but also for small series of products or parts. Of course, it's pretty much the same story as with every manufacturing machine. When you are operating a SLM machine, there are some safety rules because, for example, metal alloys are toxic or some of them are very reactive with air. But more 3D printing machines, as we have, has a lot of safety circuits and the risk of accident is very, very small.
How exciting is it for students to use these machines and to what degree do they actually use them when they're studying at the school?
Actually, our center has open access. So if you are a student of the Faculty of Mechanical Engineering and you are interested in additive manufacturing or 3D printing, then you have a big chance to learn something on real-world projects for private sector. So there is not special treatment for students. If you are enthusiastic, we will work with you. And if you are, let's say, interested in 3D printing, you can work for us in the future. But frankly speaking, there are only a small number of students who are interested in 3D printing right now. We don't know what is the reason, but still, it's very, very strange, you know, because now, for example, in Germany, there are a lot of centers on the universities, and they are full of students, and they are working on with the wind industry. But it's a different story here in Czech Republic. But I hope it will change in the future.
Perhaps it's just the calm before the storm.
Yeah, probably. I hope so. We are doing projects for private companies. Usually, students are involved as the, let's say, a support. Great company here in Ostrava, it's called Invent Medical, and they are doing great job in prosthetics and other medical products for small children, helmets and other things, and they are built on the Industry 4.0 concept, and I think it's right now one of the most progressive companies here in Ostrava or even in Czech Republic.
That is good to hear. It sort of brings me up to the final part of the interview, how Industry 4.0 will transform basically the world as we know it, because we see that, of course, there are many positives. We talked about some of them with this kind of change, but there's also fears that come with it. There's fears of further automation and job losses.
Yeah. Firstly, I don't think that this is the revolution. I think it's rather evolution. And really, we're still going to have big impact on modern design, but it's the same story as with automation and robotization. There will probably impact on jobs in manufacturing industry, but on the other hand, emerging industries will certainly create a bunch of new opportunities for many people. So I think it's evolution, and 3D printing will not change the fundamental ways of manufacturing for the whole industry, at least not in the next 10 or 15 years. There will be huge impacts on industry, no doubt about it, but we need to probably wait for future generations of 3D printing machines beyond current generation of selective laser melt-linked 3D printers.
Petr Štefek from the Technical University in Ostrava, and that interview was broadcast for the first time in March of this year. That's all we have time for right now on Radio Prague. You can, of course, contact us by email at english@radio.cz. Or you'll find us on Twitter or on Facebook. But for now, from me, Ian Willoughby, thanks for listening, folks, and do please join us again soon.